Curry off a screen, dribbles on DeAndre Jordan, baseline, comes out left wing, behind the back, an ankle breaker on Chris Paul, and he knocked down the jumper. Paul fell down. Curry just floored him with that move.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. With me, as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, how's it going today, man?
It is good.
You want to get out your obligatory DC reference now? You want to hold on to it till later on? What do you think?
I just got back from DC this week.
There you go. Boom.
I'm gonna tell you about it when we talk about the Clippers game.
I would like to hear nothing about it. I guess we'll see. If you can somehow shoehorn in a DC story about the Warriors-Clippers game, I am very, very impressed. We'll put that on you. See how it plays.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Well, I'll take your invitation, man. Let's talk about the Clippers game. I don't want to go through too many of the details, but there were some things that absolutely stuck out. First off, amazing win. What a sh-burger beginning to the game.
Terrible. I mean, and this is where I'll work in the DC story.
My God, this early.
I was flying back from DC on Virgin when that game was happening.
I'm going to say, I thought you were joking about this. Turns out, no. All
right, no, no. I mean, yeah. and having a game to look forward to for a flight, I mean, there's nothing better than to be stuck on a flight. True. But have an awesome game.
Yeah.
My first mistake was not realizing the time difference. And so I was so fired up. I was like, I'll be able to watch the entire game on this flight. Turns out, due to the time difference, I was only able to watch the first quarter, which was so terrible. Yeah. That I actually wasn't too sad that I had to get off the flight.
If you were going
to
handpick a quarter not to watch, it would be that one. And it wasn't, they didn't just look listless. I mean, it almost looked like a Mark Jackson offense. I mean, it was like we took a time machine back to the game. Everyone was doing these terrible ISO kind of plays. Everyone seemed a little bit out of sorts. None of the passes were crisp. They weren't moving the ball. It was ugly. And you can also tell it's frustrating. Kerr, a guy who's normally demonstratively angry and is kind of pacing the sidelines, sat down. It was almost like a defeatist attitude.
Well,
like,
they interviewed him after that first quarter, and he basically says they want it more than us.
Right. We don't need it. Who gives a about this game? It is what it is. And that's what made it impressive to me. They didn't need the win. They are, what, 10 and a half games ahead in the Western Conference. This was what it was. Rivalry game or not. Really, it was an opportunity for them to rest, which is what they did with Draymond. But it was pride that brought them back, which is what made me enjoy it so much. And really, it was on the shoulders of Steph, man.
Yeah, well, it also, it's going to happen in a Clippers game because of that rivalry and because that team is so annoying that at some point in the game, no matter if you could tell yourself, look, I'm not going to get worked up about this. I'm not going to care even if we lose this game. I'm just going to take it easy, go through the motions. At some point during that game, Doc Rivers is going to erupt on some total BS call.
I like
call.
Doc Clippers.
Yeah.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah. Or I should call him Glenn.
No, the cool story, Doc Clippers doesn't roll off as well. Yeah. But, you know, either way.
You know, or someone's going to flop or Chris Paul's going to do something that gets you so it's just so worked up, you're going to care.
We've talked about the Clippers being the most annoying team in the league. I can't imagine. It's just our observation. I'm not actually on the floor. I mean, it must be insanely annoying to watch them celebrate on you if they're playing well. So the Warriors did respond. I mentioned it was on the back of Steph. I meant it. And then when they got down 17, it was his effort. He gave us a four-point play. He kind of brought him within 10 real close to the half, and then he ultimately brought home the victory. So that was phenomenal, but wasn't the only thing that stuck out to me. You've mentioned rivalry. It's actually spilled into the coaches now. Do you see the barbs that Doc Clippers and Steve Kerr exchanged beforehand? Draymond wasn't playing, right? So he had the shin inflammation. They sat him for a couple of games. I'm sure it wasn't a serious injury. They just wanted to hold him. When they asked Doc Rivers about it, what he first said was that they held him back because Steve Kerr was afraid of his team going full squad and then going 2-2 against him in the regular season. Here's the quote. Quote, that was pretty predictable. We kind of assumed they didn't want to take the risk of going 2-2 with their regular guys. They ran that by Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr answers, either that or we have a 10-game lead in the Western Conference with a couple guys banged up. It's somewhere in there. I love that. You know, he could have just let that go. Who cares? And instead gave Doc Clippers a big F you. You know?
Yeah. Well, why do you think was the reason Draymond didn't play?
I think they're 10 games up. What they have, they don't care about going 2-2 against the Clip. Imagine what that would mean if Glenn was right. That he went, looked up the record against the Clippers, thought to themselves, my God, we might go, you know, 50-50 against these guys, so I can't do that. I'll sit one of our best players. You know, I don't think that had anything
really
to do with it.
See, I could see just sitting him because then you have an excuse of, well, we lost, but, you know, Draymond didn't play. So it's almost more so the Clippers don't gain confidence than it is necessarily for Golden State to say, well, we weren't full squad.
I think that would have been true last year. If we were a good team, not an elite team, then we'd have to be really worried about the mind games we're playing with teams like the Clips, right? This year, not when you have a 10-game lead, not when you're clearly the best team in the league and you're now coasting towards the number one seed in the NBA Finals, you don't give a shit about how your lineup affects the Clippers. Not at this stage. They're too far down. You know, I mean, like, yeah. They're a good team, but they're not a rival, at least as far as standings are concerned. So I don't think that they were playing mind games on that.
It's great to see these two teams actually being honest with how they feel and like throwing barbs, because for so long in the NBA, it just felt like that was missing.
Yep.
And people were being too cautious with what they said. And I'm actually amazed that Draymond puts all that stuff out there, because there's a chance he plays for the Clippers one day, you know, in some
probably
different universe.
You know, probably not more. Now, I will say they missed him. They won the game, you know, and we're going to talk about how good this team is. But Blake Griffin put up 40 and looked phenomenal. I mean, I'd forgotten how good this guy was and the physically imposing stature that he actually, you know, presents with. But the last two times he's played us, I think it was like 16 and 12 points. The difference this time, no Draymond, man. You know, anybody who thinks this guy might not be the defensive player in the year, I don't think you have to look too much further than this last effort. He does things that we do not see unless and until he's not out there and you notice his absence. You know, I mean, he's a huge cog.
And, I mean, Draymond is guarding oftentimes the best, most impactful player on the other team.
Yep.
And that is often lost when you bring the comparison to DeAndre Jordan, who stopped Bogut. I mean, you know, he protects the rim. I don't know. That to me is not as impactful as Draymond holding Blake Griffin to the stats you just read.
Draymond also really did bring something to the game, even though he didn't play. I'm not sure they would show this during the first quarter or if you saw it on the plane, but he had the most amazing jacket I have ever seen.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I mean, it looked like he was dressed like a Commodore from, like, World War II or something. It's like this weirdo tan jacket that had a pin chain. Now, new term for me. I've never seen a pin chain. It was a pin on his right lapel that had a chain that dipped all the way down and then came back in.
It was going into pockets that I never knew pockets existed in those places on a jacket.
Look, I'm not a big style guy. I mean, I'll just tell you that right now. Like, my clothes probably mostly came from like the mid-90s, so maybe I'm just behind. Is there a big pin chain craze that's going on right now?
I saw Andre Iguodala wearing a similar thing after the game.
Did, like, a pin chain as well? I didn't see.
Yeah, it was a pin chain. I think it was also this tan jacket too, so I don't know if somebody gave him all the whole Warriors gifts and they both rocked it on the same day or what.
I will say I was in the middle of a remarkably entertaining game. I was loving the Warriors' comeback. They had some shot of Draymond and I had to pause it and rewind it just to look at the pin chain. It was so amazingly entertaining to me. So I'm glad someone else noticed.
I think it was Jalen Rose one time talked about when you go to cities that have big nightlife, and you're a player who's
wear a pin chain.
He didn't talk about the pin chain, but he just talked about how if oftentimes you'll see players they know they're going to go out after, and so if they're not in the game, they'll just rock whatever attire they're going to be going to the club in. And I think Draymond, he shows up in LA. He was definitely ready to go party afterwards.
I love the idea of me and friends going out to the club, and I show up with my boy, and he has a pin chain on. I can't imagine the conversation that would follow. But again, I am not a fashion genius, so maybe I'm just behind the curve. We are in some ways burying the lead.
Yeah.
The one thing that came out that will probably be on the internet for the rest of our lives and fathered more tweets and more memes and more Vine things was Steph's move on CP3, man. That was nasty.
Yeah, to me, one of the most amazing things about it, and it really goes to the point that basketball is just an incredible sport where you see new things every day. I had never seen a guard be in the position of having your back to your own baseline and doing a crossover move in any fashion. Like, the idea that something went through Steph Curry's head where he said, I can turn this into a scoring opportunity is just incredible.
I'm going to do too much with this, and it'll piss you off hopefully in two different ways. First, I'm going to use the word Jordan, then I'm going to compare him to Steph. I don't think that Steph has anywhere remotely close to Jordan's skill level for obvious reasons. Jordan, to me, is the best, most talented human being who's ever touched a basketball. But there is a striking similarity that this move kind of showed, man, and it's that Jordan would take the floor and occasionally do things that I have never seen done in a basketball game. Just never. And I did not even, couldn't even think about doing it. Like, it was just outside of my field of knowledge of what could happen with a basketball. Steph is doing those kind of things occasionally now. You know what I mean? Like, that move, like you're saying, I've never seen anything like that. Like, I didn't even even really know how to analyze it or where the hell that would come from. So his creativity is Jordan-like. And I think it's that reason. You don't play with that kind of skill. You don't have these type of moves. You don't play on a team with this many wins without being the MVP. I think it was a question before. It's not anymore. I mean, you know, if for the gamblers out there, the line has moved to 2-1 for Steph being the MVP. You bet $200 to win 100. Bet it. Free money. It's going to happen. I'm going on record. It's done.
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, Harden's been putting up like 50-point games all over the place. And he has – I don't want to turn this into a debate between – I want to focus on this move, so I don't even – you baited me into that.
I don't want to talk about Harden. That was all you. I was hoping you were going to call him James Rockets. But, I mean, whatever works for you.
To me, I compartmentalize this move, Curry's move, into two different segments. One is the move itself, which we talked about, the creativity and whatnot. The second is the fall. And I think this is where I differ with a lot of people. I don't really think that Chris Paul fell entirely because of the move as much as he fell because he stepped on Curry's foot as he was trying to slide backwards.
What are you talking about right now?
If you watch
what
the
replay,
he steps on Curry's foot.
Either way, then that was part of the move. He still fell because of what Steph did.
No, he did not. A real fall is when you break somebody off to the point where their ankle rolls and they can't hold themselves up anymore. Paul stepped on Curry's foot and slid. And so that, to me, it's not as meaningful.
I'm not even really sure what we're talking about. I guess, are you saying that it was on accident that he failed? Are you giving Steph no credit? Does this take away from the beauty of the move?
It takes away from the beauty for certainly, because it wasn't a true fall. Like, in order to, in my mind, record like a true ankle-breaking fall, a guy can't step on your foot and fall because of that.
I think that Chris Paul is a remarkably talented and coordinated human being. In fact, up until last night, may have been the most talented point guard in the NBA. I think that he has enough body control to avoid other people's feet unless and until someone jukes him so terribly that he doesn't know where his foot is landing and then he falls over, which is exactly what happened.
That's fine. It's not as impressive as making him fall without having him step and slip on his foot.
All
but
right.
I, you brought up a good point, which is this a passing of the torch? I mean, was that move something where it's like the State Farm commercial with the two of them where Curry's going up the escalator and CP3's going down?
I do think it was an absolute passing of the torch. In fact, I don't think that there was a better way to do it than that being the exclamation point. That wasn't the only way that he torched him during the game. CP3 was behind him through most of the first three quarters.
And I think Curry's been torching him all season.
Yeah. So I think that that was a very easy way to kind of personify the switch. You know, we actually got to see it all in one actual move, you know, so I do think it was a passing of the torch, but that probably happened a little bit earlier this year.
How much do you think in Steph's mind, as he sees CP3 start to fall and Steph knows he's about to put up the jump shot, how much is he like praying that this goes in? Because you know that it's going to be replayed tons more time if the jumper goes in.
I think he's elite enough where he didn't. I think if you and I make that move, I miss the shot because I'd be so worried about it. That's happened before.
I'd start laughing.
Yes. I mean, like something bad would... No, I would just get nervous and miss the shot because I knew everyone was now watching. I don't think Steph goes through that at all. And in fact, I pulled a quote that Steph gave us about the move. Listen to the confidence he drops in this quote.
Snake through the paint and kind of was just probing, and I knew he was trailing, and I thought I could make a move back to the basket, and somewhere that creativity in between doing a double move or whatever, and then as soon as I saw him kind of go down, I knew I had to shoot it and just see what happened.
Somewhere in the creativity of the move, I lost him. I mean, not only is that kind of poetic, but there is a giant badge of confidence that comes with that. It wasn't an FU. It wasn't I beat you. It was, I am that good. And in this instance, I was just too good for him. He couldn't guard me. I hit the shot. Somebody who says something like that is not worried about the 18-foot jumper afterwards.
I don't know, but he says I just threw it up and we're going to see what happens. So it doesn't sound like he was too confident about the jumper or taking the shot.
False humility. Definitely false humility. The best shooter on earth isn't worried about an 18-footer going down.
The best part of that quote is somebody in the background going, whoop.
Okay, now, was he doing that? I also love that. Do you think that person heard him talk about the move and was giving us a little like Looney Tunes sound like that personified the move, or was that just happening in the background?
Either the person was listening to Curry and did it for the emphasis, or the person was just talking to somebody else about the same move. Because you know everyone was talking about that in the locker room.
Absolutely right.
He was probably talking to another reporter and did that move again to emphasize the move. But that sound was absolutely related to the crossover.
Do you think that was the sound that Chris Paul's foot made when it actually stepped on Steph's? Or is that that's what they were trying to...
It did have... He was probably trying to explain why it wasn't really that big of a deal that he fell.
I can't believe you came to this show with some reason why we shouldn't be as impressed with that move. I really... You're like Mr. Downer. I mean, my God, Scott.
I'm just being realistic because because I've been in a situation before where that's happened where some guy did a crossover and I stepped on his foot and I fell down. And I'm like screaming to everybody, like, no, like I stepped on his foot. I would not have fallen down if it weren't for the stepping on the foot. He did not cross me.
Did any of the people you screamed that to buy it then either, or do they know that that was bullshit then as well?
Well, we didn't have the benefit of Vine and
Twitter and everything
replay.
Else. That's unfortunate because I would love to see a replay of that specifically. A few other really quick things before we move on to our next topic about the Clipper game. One, Austin Rivers, the nepotism kid. You see his neck beard? Just disgust. He's got a goatee that he's decided not to shave the bottom of his neck. That's something you learn at about 14 when you start shaving. Like, that's the homeless portion of the beard, man. Don't let the bottom neck homeless thing start growing out. Terrible decision.
That's something you're doing to see if your dad says anything to you. Like, just kind of testing the boundaries.
Maybe he didn't get like put in the last couple fourth quarters, and he's like, it's almost like he's acting out to see if his dad can still see him.
Right? Know? Like, does my dad even care enough to?
Have you noticed my neck beard, Dad? You forced me to grow this. So that was one thing that stood out to me. The other was Sam Cassell's glasses. You see Sam Cassell on the bench for the Clips?
I had to do a double take whether or not that was Sam Cassell.
My God. Okay. Now I'm going to try to say this as objectively as I possibly can without getting, you know, stuck in hyperbole. Sam Cassell is the ugliest human being I've ever seen in my life. I'm just going to throw that out there. We've talked about it in the show before. We've talked about his resemblance to E.T., how he could probably make a bike fly, those kind of things. He put those glasses on. He looked like a normal human being, man.
It changed his whole facial structure.
It's unbelievable. Nobody suggested that to him. Let me put it a different way. How long has his vision problems been going? Because if it's been long enough where he decided to use contacts for a while before he went to the glasses, whatever doctor told him to do that needs to be shot in their face. Those glasses are the best decision Sam Cassell has ever made.
No, people, he should look into starting something. Instead of plastic surgery, he just... It fits you for
glasses,
your
consistently.
Glasses.
That's
because,
a,
I mean, that it changed his entire face.
That's 100% true.
It was amazing.
100% true. Well, here's what I took away from the game, you know, neck beards and face-changing glasses aside. I have been praising this team throughout the entire year. And I've almost kind of been pussyfooting around it. You know, they're amazing. Who knows what happens? Or I can't believe how good they are, but the other shoe's going to drop. After this last game, I really honestly believe that this is the most talented franchise organization I've ever watched in 36 years of watching sports. It's not just their starting five. It's not just their bench. It's not just that these guys play really well together, that their games mesh. It's not just that they have a good coaching staff or a good ownership group. Not just that they have a good front office. You take pieces away from them. They lost Clay. No problem. They win. They sit Draymond. No problem. They win. We went through stretches without Bogut. They still have the best record in the NBA. This is as talented of a team I've ever watched, and it is a goddamn pleasure being able to do
it. I mean, that's premature, man. Like, talk about speaking in hyperboles. That was over the top.
Everything I just said was true. It's an unfinished story. We don't know how they're going to do in the playoffs, and they could still f*** it up. But what we've watched, everything I just said is on the money. There's not one thing that's off.
The most impressive franchise?
That I've watched? Sure.
Maybe you haven't watched a lot of franchises.
Consistently. I've never rooted for a team, watching them on a consistent basis, that had this kind of upside. I've watched teams with good starting lineups but had a terrible bench. You know, I've watched teams that succeeded despite their front office or under last year. It was an almost identical roster, but their coaching staff really left something to be desired. And their bench wasn't as tough as I'd like it to be. These guys are hitting on all cylinders. They really are. They absolutely
are. But
are.
I mean, that's just a really bold statement when you're talking about teams like Boston Celtics who have won, I don't know, 17 championships. And
I didn't watch them consistently.
The Bulls dynasty. And yeah, I mean, you're couching this in the statement using the I.
Sure.
So
well,
know, certainly couching. We can't say what you have and haven't watched.
There's a different way to it. I have been waiting 3.5 decades to watch this team. I mean, and it's a really weird thing to say, but I mean, this whole time, I remember buying a license plate for my car way back when that had Thunder on it. It was during the, you know, the dark years, during the 1990s. And when my...
It had Thunder the mascot?
Thunder the mascot on it. And my girlfriend asked me, what the hell are you doing? And I said, at some point, the team's going to be really good, and I'm going to be so fired up that I can show people I've been there forever. At that point, we're talking about some date I didn't really think was going to come. You know, or maybe it would, and who knows when the hell. This is the season I've been waiting for. I mean, we'll see how it ends.
Yeah. Well, but I guess, I mean, that's the question that I've been discussing with some people lately is, what would you rather have? A regular season like this where your team is providing you with victory after victory. I mean, and these are enjoyable wins. They're leading the NBA. I mean, all the stuff you just went through.
Yep.
But they don't win a championship.
Yep.
Or a team that, let's say there was some alternative scenario where your team could be last in the league, least wins,
and then
but they get
into
the playoffs and they
like
win
the
championship.
Like the San Francisco Giants through a few of their championship
yeah.
years. Which would I prefer? The championship run. No,
really?
No question. Yeah, absolutely.
The championship ring.
Yes.
See, I don't know how you can say that when that's just putting 3 or 4 weeks of playoff basketball in a championship together, you know, maybe you enjoy that 4 weeks, but this season has been so enjoyable. Why would you trade 3 or 4 weeks
right now,
for an entire 7 months?
They open up against the Thunder and they lose. Let's say they lose in the first round. Will I can think back on this season as a success? Hell no. Hell no.
But maybe not as
so disappointed looking back on this. Absolutely. Whereas if they had snuck in with 51 wins and then they ran off a championship, the first championship in my Warriors fandom, would I prefer that? Of course I would.
I mean, maybe not the maybe from the definition of success, it's certainly would be a failure. But what about the definition from a fan's perspective of what was more enjoyable? You can't replace...
Ask Dallas Mavericks fan from the We Believe Years.
No, that would be great... I would love to have that fan on right now.
Because I can tell you personally, if these guys go into the first round and they lose, I won't even want to talk about this season. It will be the same way that Dirk Nowitzki doesn't really talk about the MVP year from when he lost in the first round. For me, I mean, as a
yeah,
fan,
but I
it
think
would be
disappointing. I think you're missing out on what this really means, and maybe that the journey is more important than the end.
Missing out? I just told you this is the most talented team I've ever watched for 30 years. I hope that
but
those
that,
two
and
things...
You're abandoning all that just if they don't win in the first round of playoffs. I don't know how you can do that.
Well, let's see. Your question to me was, which one would I prefer? My answer is championship. Now, would it also upset me? Would it ruin my memories of this? Yeah, it would. It absolutely would. It'd be like having a phenomenal relationship with a woman, then I have a terrible breakup with her. Could I think about the relationship without thinking about the breakup? Probably not. It would probably be a part of it, and I think that'll be true here. But great transition, because I do think this is going to lead into a championship. More than that, if they don't win a championship, like I just said, it's wasted at this stage. It's too good. They are too goddamn good for this not to end in a title. Otherwise, I'll be disappointed. But what I want to do is I have put together all the reasons these guys can't win the title. And there's a handful of them, and there's enough. And I want to go through each of them and then figure out whether or not we think they're legit or they're just completely made up. Reason number one, Charles Barkley, it's the easy one. These guys are a jump shooting team, no low post offense, and when the game slows down in the playoffs, they will not be able to score, they will not be able to adapt, and for that reason alone, they cannot win the championship. Legit, not legit.
I think it's very legit.
Why?
I do. Now, I don't think that they're necessarily just a jump shooting team.
No, I got you. Yep.
But I mean, I think Barkley's on the money. For some reason, the game slows down in the playoffs. I can't get anyone to explain why that happens and why, if it's so successful, you don't just do that during the regular season and win that way. But for some reason, everyone says the game slows down in the playoffs, and you see it happen. And teams that rely on the jump shot, they go cold. I mean, you have to rely on being a hot jump shooting team for many months. It's not like the NCAA tournament where you catch fire for a weekend.
Right. I think it's an outdated critique. I'm going to say not legit. I think the game as we know it, the NBA game, has really changed over the last couple of years, probably this year more than anything, where three-point shots and court spacing has become much more important than anything else. The true power forward, for example, is almost dead. You know, what we're looking at now is stretch fours. What I really think that makes this illegitimate is that this is not a normal jump shooting team. This is a historically great jump shooting team who doesn't just settle for bad jump shots, but has utilized a remarkable ball movement offense to get high percentage jump shots. So as long as we're taking shots that are, you know, 45 to 55% probably going in, whether or not it's in the paint with the guys back to the basket or an open 18 footer that Steph knows he can make, I'm fine with. So I don't view this as something that's going to screw us.
Right. This is not a jump shooting team in the sense that Harrison Barnes is taking random three pointers from all spots across the arc. Harrison Barnes' three-pointers come in the corner, and that's a very high percentage shot. And as long as they continue to do that, I can't see it being so bad that they don't win a seven-game series.
They were coming down and just chucking up whatever the hell they could get, like they were under Mike Jackson. I'd be worried.
Mark
but
Jackson.
They're not. They're not at all. They're moving the ball as much as they possibly can until one opens up. So I don't feel this to be a legit one. I'd be lying to you to tell you that I am not concerned, but I don't think it's a reason they can't win the ship. Number two, they've been dominating everybody. The downside of that is there's no close games. These guys don't have experience in close games, so they won't be able to close them out in the playoffs. Legit or not legit, let me start this one off. I say not legit. We've had close games.
Shocker.
Yeah, we've had close games recently, and they have been fine. The game we were just talking about, we're down 17, scratched and clawed all the way back, and when it got close, nobody suddenly became tight or didn't know what the hell to do. I don't think that's going to translate into the playoffs. In fact, I think it's a ridiculous argument.
I don't think it's ridiculous at all, because having experience in close games and time to score possession situations, it's invaluable.
They have it, though.
They don't have it,
though. They've been playing hoop their entire lives.
But not as a team, and not under this coaching staff. And you can run these plays all you want in practice and tell you the first squad's playing against the second squad, and here's the scenario, we're down by two, let's run this play. It's nothing like it is in playoff basketball.
So it's nerves there? I mean, what does that break down to? Like, because they're not used to taking the last second shot, they won't be able to take it in the playoffs? Is that where that would come from?
Yeah, it's having the almost muscle memory and then be able to make the right decision in a very stressful situation.
The people who would be taking that shot for us have all done that so many times over and over and over and over again in their careers that I am fairly certain they'd be able to do it. Here's a very stupid and trivial example. When the Bulls won 70, I bet you most of those games were not close. I'm positive no one was saying Jordan and the boys don't know how to deliver under pressure because they haven't been under close games. Now, we haven't seen it with these guys yet. I mean, of course, there's a difference between those two, but there can't just be some hard and fast rule that says if you don't play in close games, you're not going to be able to deliver in the playoffs. That's ridiculous.
I just see in this year, I just think back to that Chicago game.
That Jordan thing was pretty good, don't you think? I just said, I like that.
They won 70, which is, they really won 72. So.
That's right. No, even better. And probably so two more blowouts to put onto the table.
But that's not backed up by any real stat, because you admitted you didn't actually know how many close games they had. So
do you want to look them up? I do think that was a really good point, but I've cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, look at the Chicago game this year where Curry had the ball, the game was secured, and he tries to throw some full court pass so he could get an exclamation dunk on the game, turns it over. Heinrich hits a three. That, to me, is a really valuable learning experience. And they needed more of them this year.
I am not even going to respond to that. It was, what learning experience? Don't throw full court passes to get an exclamation point? I don't think
that'd be one of the lessons.
I don't think you're going to have to worry about Curry going for any and one play at the end of a playoff game to put an exclamation point. Something tells me that a regular season game against the Bulls is not going to help prepare him to ice out a game against the playoffs, but it's one we disagree on. Hopefully we'll have more. Here's my next one for you. You need to get there first. The NBA is a experienced-based game, specifically in the playoffs. If you don't know what it feels like to play in the finals and the attention that that brings, then you'll wilt in them at least the first time. This one I think is legit.
Really?
I do. Cool. This is the one that worries me the most. I don't know. I mean, you and I have talked about it. There's nobody on the actual playing roster who has ever made it past the second round in the playoffs. Now, the coaches, Luke Walton, Steve Kerr, I mean, obviously they've done it. But there's nobody who's actually going to be handling a ball who knows what it feels like to be in the playoffs. That concerns me. It's not end-all, be-all. But it is something that I think they're going to have to fight through and get used to before they can play at the same level they've been playing in the regular season.
It certainly helps to have been there before. Again, it goes back to...
Are you saying no, not legit? Are we flipping roles on this? Just
Yeah. I'm saying not legit.
Right.
Like you talk about what does it mean to have late game experience throughout the regular season, and why would that be helpful? These guys know what to do down the stretch. What does it mean to be in the playoffs? It's just another basketball game. Why would you need to have been there before?
I think there's a huge difference between the two. I mean, they talk about people who first play in the Super Bowl get all weirded out by the media day. That, like, it's you take something that seems familiar, and now the environment is completely different, and you kind of have to get used to the added eyes that are on you and the concept of playing for a world championship. The idea of taking a last-second shot is not new.
These guys go through so much media and have so many eyes on them at all times.
I don't think anything like we see in the finals. And experience has taught that, to me at least. You know, like you look at even like when the Thunder made it the first time, and I think honestly if they had not traded James Harden and made it back, I think the only thing that held them back is they weren't used to playing in that stage and then ultimately blossomed. I hope you're right.
I mean, look at the 2004 Pistons. They won the championship. I think that that was their first time in it.
Can you name anybody else?
So it can be done. Well,
I mean, I don't think it's a death nail. You know, there's obviously no hard and fast rule again that says thou shalt not win unless you've been there before.
You're also assuming that the team they're playing against has been there.
Yep.
Which I don't think is necessarily going to be the case this year because let's say it's Cleveland. Okay, LeBron's been there, obviously.
But the rest of the people haven't.
The rest of the people haven't. Atlanta, no. So, you know, it could be an even playing field.
True. I hope that that's true, but it is one that concerns me. Here's the next one, injuries. Bogut's injury prone. It's only a matter of time before he goes down. The second we lose him, we are screwed. Legit or not legit?
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true related to just Bogut, but certainly injuries could be a big problem.
Yep.
I mean, definitely legit.
I'll say not legit, but only because that threat is true for everybody. Cleveland loses LeBron, they're done. Houston loses James Harden, they're done. You know, you lose your best player or someone who plays that big of a role for you, of course you're done. But that's part of basketball. I don't buy into the idea that Bogut is injury prone. We've had this discussion. We don't have to argue it again. I do. I'm one of those freak play, wrong time kind of thing. So if I do think that he's no more injury prone than any of the other people out there who are important to the game, then this can't be some reason that somehow holds the Warriors back. That's true for all of us.
Yeah, and the Warriors have proved this year that they've done pretty well when other guys get injured.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. All right. Easy to be physical with Curry and knock him out of a game. And this is what we saw last year in the Clippers series. They lost in 7 games. They were physical with him everywhere. They ultimately forced the ball out of his hands. Other people couldn't react. We lose in 7. Legit? Not legit.
I don't think that's legit anymore.
Why?
Because they figured out how to work around that.
I feel like we should hug. I agree with you on this one.
I mean, why do you think that?
For what you're saying, I think this is a completely different offense. I mean, what they have figured out now, you want to double him, you want to knock him down, you want to push him around, Draymond's going to hit a 3 in your ass. Or you're going to find Harrison Barnes in the corner. Or you're going to see Klay Thompson, you know, put up 29 points in a quarter on you. You know, we are no longer a one-dimensional offense. Steph is no longer a one-dimensional player. You want to make him into a playmaker? Go for it. See how that works out for you.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I think he's always going to figure out a way to beat you, and maybe it's not scoring, but it'll be playmaking then.
Here's kind of a weird one. I'm not sure how to phrase it. I'll do my best. I think there's going to be some kind of a difference in that first game, literally the first playoff game. Can they keep up the magic that happened in the regular season into the postseason? People always say there's 2 seasons, right? What you've done in the regular season means nothing until you can do it again in the postseason. And I honestly believe there's going to be something important about that first half where they can establish, nope, what we did before was legit. That's who we are. That magic is continuing over. But to phrase it here, can they keep the momentum from a regular season into a postseason? Legitimate concern or not really?
I think that actually goes back to something we brought up early on this season, which hasn't really happened, which is how is Kerr and this team going to handle when they have a hiccup finally?
Yep.
And earlier we thought that it was going to happen when they went on a losing streak,
right,
and there was going to be some dissent, there was going to be some sort of upheaval at some point. Yep. And it hasn't happened, and maybe it'll happen in the playoffs, but I don't think so. Because
good show on finishing that last sentence, by the way. It looked like it was going to be a trouble, but you got it.
Yeah, I nailed it.
You fought through.
Right. And so I don't think that's really not a concern for me. Because I do think that first game is going to be the most...
Strangely important, right?
Strangely important, and is probably the other team's best chance to steal a game at home.
I feel like there's almost more pressure on the first game because of the success they've had than they would have if they had just had a normal, really successful season. 59 wins or something. You know, like, oh, that's great. They deserve the first seed, but not like where they're going to end up, like 66, 67.
And not just the number of wins, but the point differential.
Absolutely right.
Blowing
teams. No, that's
out.
Absolutely right. So I'm going to go not legit only because, I think they get that out of their system, the jitters or whatever it is, you know, and I do think the type of ball they're playing is sustainable. They're not getting lucky. You know, this is real skill we're seeing, but it is going to be an issue they're going to have to get through. Okay, a little bit more specific. One of these I think is no longer a concern, but I'll throw it out. Memphis, a legitimate reason why we can't get through them. You and I have talked about their size is going to really screw us. Legitimate concern or not, I'll say not because of the way we went into the Grindhouse, which is a really annoying name in my mind, punched them in the mouth and took a victory by 20 points, one that Memphis really needed just recently.
That's just one game, though. You got to worry about Memphis. They've had our number for a long time.
And their style of play, right?
And their style of play with the two bigs. So, and I mean, really defensive oriented. So I definitely think they're a risk. And you're going to be facing them probably in one of the later rounds after you may have been beat up a bit yourself.
I think it's Western Conference Finals. If the season ended today, don't hold me to this, but I'm pretty sure the season ended today, we wouldn't see in this the team they're going to be playing as the next one on my list, San Antonio or Memphis, until the Western Conference Finals, which I am really happy to see. But you're right, by the time they get there, the Warriors could be kind of worn down, and playing against these guys would hurt. And they really dovetail into that jump shooting team, because if anybody, jump shooting problem, if anyone's going to slow down the game, if anyone's going to make it a shit show and, you know, make it a foul-based slowdown post-game, it's Memphis. But I'm not going to even, you're right, one game, it was a hell of a game, a hell of a statement. They don't concern me in the same way. Here's who does, San Antonio. They have been on fire recently, and it's not just how they've been on fire. It's not just that they've been on fire, it's how they've been on fire, and it's because they look like the Spurs from last year. Tony Parker is suddenly Tony Parker again. Kawhi Leonard has forced himself into the Defensive Player of the Year after only really playing that type of D for the last month. Boris Diaw is doing Boris Diaw-y fat Frenchman, you know, really successful things for them. I mean, they're the goddamn Spurs again.
Yep.
Legitimate. That worries me, man. It really legitimately worries me. That's not a team I'd like to see.
And Tim Duncan has been incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, truly, like, outstanding player that I just don't know how he can continue to play this high level, both defensively and offensively. The Spurs are absolutely a concern. If there's anything I've learned, it's that you cannot count them out. So I'm not going to do that this year and think that they're finally done.
Well, and as much as I love Kerr, Popovich, and we may have talked about this in the past, I think has some kind of Manchurian candidate thing over Kerr. It wouldn't surprise me if he comes over and whispers the word like lemon in his face, and then suddenly Kerr can't speak for the next 8 days because Popovich put that in his head way the hell back when. Now, none of these up until now, to me, I mean, concerns, the one I said legitimate, they are concerning to me. None of them death nails. I think each one of these the Warriors can get over. Here's one I don't know they can. LeBron. LeBron continues to be the best player on earth right now. He showed that when the Warriors played him, and I don't know if the Warriors can beat. If LeBron plays at the top of his game for four games, I don't know if they can win that series.
Yeah, I saw him do it against the Pistons back in the mid-2000s when the Pistons, you know, should have won that series, and he just single-handedly, he took over the entire series. I'm not just talking about a game or a quarter. I mean, he single-handedly won a series. He can do it.
That Cleveland team may be held back by the whole you have to get there first thing. You know, Kyrie has never played in any big games. Kevin Love has never played in any big games. I mean, like, no NCAA tournament games, no playoff games.
He went to the Final Four.
Kyrie didn't. I guess Kevin Love did. Yeah, Kyrie got hurt in Duke within the first like 2 weeks,
right? Yeah.
And did nothing. So their inexperience or Kyrie's inexperience may hold them back, but LeBron terrifies me. Those are my lists. So if you factor that all in, it won't be a huge surprise to hear I still think they are going to win the title. I think they finish off the two-step. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a chance.
That's not my question. Do you think, I mean, if you had to put me at $100 right now, would you put it on the Warriors to win it? Would your money go back them, or do you have somebody else in mind?
It's such a messy situation this year with so much parity that I'm not sure that I can really say who I think is going
to
win.
If you had to pick a team with a gun to your head, I mean, and I understand you don't think there's a favorite. There's not someone we can definitely know as like, okay, these guys are going to take it. But if you had to pick one team out of the NBA league.
Yeah. I think I'd go San Antonio.
Yeah. God damn it. I really thought you were going to say worse. I thought we were going to have like a happy ending, like a kumbaya moment. Way to go, Scott.
You know, and I look back and I actually, it's really because.
If you mention Detroit one more time, we're fighting. I swear to God.
it's because they haven't been there before, and it's funny because I think I said that wasn't
my God.
I know.
Surprise ending there. Fair enough. All right, huge fun. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. We really enjoy this. That was certainly true this week. Remember, we'd love your takes. You agree with anything we've said before or disagree with anything we've said before, just want to call us stupid or smart, hit us up on email. We can be reached at warriorshuddle@gmail.com. We're also up on Twitter. That one is @warriorshuddle. Our website is still warriorsworld.net. Check that out for more than us. There's a lot of great stuff up on there, and still on a bunch of iTunes services and iPod services and all types of things where you can find our show. The reason I'm bringing it up, another desperate plea, if you do in fact use iTunes and you have 30 seconds, hop on there and give us a 5-star rating. It really, really helps us out. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Hopefully, we'll see you next week.
Good, good.